My name is Emily White, and this is a session on dream sharing with Jung's view on religion. Good morning, and I hope this rainy day has sharpened our minds. Since it's not a day for hiking, it's a good day for thinking. How many of you have heard of Carl Gustav Jung? He was a follower of Freud. He's a Swiss psychiatrist who lived from 1875 to 1961. And in his 85th year, he wrote this book, Man and His Symbols, that's on the board. The book, Man and His Symbols, was in the bookstore, but is sold out, but it is available in any other bookstore. I'll briefly tell you how he wrote the book, because he was interviewed by man John Freeman from the BBC, who asked him, wouldn't you write a book that can be understood by just ordinary people who are not scholars or who are not trained in academics? And most of Jung's writing, you see, his 20 volumes are exceedingly esoteric or difficult, hard to read. But this book, Man and His Symbols, is written specifically for the general public. And to give you an example of how important dreams are, he said no to John Freeman. He said, I'm too old and I've written enough. So the next day or two, he had a dream. Now, in this dream, he was standing on a platform and giving a lecture. But when he looked down, he saw that all the people who were listening to him were blue-collar workers. And when he was through, they clapped and they said, we understand what you said. And the next day, he called John Freeman. He said, I had this dream, and yes, I think I will write the book. And he finished the book 10 days before he died. So that's how much he let dreams guide his life. The reason that dreams are important, several. First of all, psychologically, they give you insights into your unconscious. Nothing else can tell us what you really like in the unconscious, because the conscious life is like the tip of an iceberg, and the conscious life is much wider. I always liken it to an x-ray. You go to your doctor and say, I twisted my ankle. But unless he takes an x-ray usually, or whatever, he cannot know if it's a broken leg. Similarly, if you come to a therapist, we cannot know what you're really troubled with. But in general, it's just a royal road to the unconscious, a key to understanding your whole being. And if you're here all week for the next three sessions, we'll get into dreams and how to analyze them. Today, sort of an introduction, but the next three times, or two times, will not be taped. So feel free to bring your dreams, though you could share them even though it is taped. It is important for us to also have some sharing, and I'll try to interpret them for you. If you have any special dreams, I'd be glad to talk to you individually. So why else are dreams important? Maybe you're not interested in looking inward. Though Jung said in the second half of life, it is imperative that you look inward. It is imperative that you take the inner journey, which is the whole title of my talks, the inner journey rather than the outer journey, because it gets a little hard to hike, gets a little difficult to do many of the things that you did when you were young, but the inner journeys are endless and rich. Dreams, understanding your dreams, is one aspect of that inner journey. So why else? Maybe you're not that interested in looking inward, even though you are in the second half of life. Then, the fact that you dream four or five times a night, and that has been established, you know, by the eye movements. Have you heard of rapid eye movements? That is when you dream. Now, in the laboratory, they have wakened people up every time they dreamt. And after a few days, they got terribly disoriented, because apparently the dreaming is a way of processing everything that happened during the day. It's like clearing the adding machine or whatever, you see? That's the best analogy. And so in the hospital too, if you're awakened many times during the night, or if you're a young mother with a baby, you may get quite disoriented, and the nicest thing a husband can do, and I've said this before, is to let the wife sleep one night and he take the baby. So it's important to have a full night's sleep so you can go through all the REM cycles. There are about four or five. But then why do you remember only one dream? Why do you remember none? Because maybe you're so outward oriented, you open your eyes, you say, well, let's see, I have to go to session at 9 and at 10:45, and shall I take the mind hike or what? This is it, hold on. If you're working, you think of what you have to do. If you're a housewife, you think, what should I make for breakfast? If you can just give yourself, 3 minutes maybe, before you open your eyes, and to just lie there and let the dream images rise. Have a little pencil and paper by your bed and write it down. You don't have to write everything, though. It's usually easy enough to just quickly write it down and forget it. Then you have it, you see. Then you can go back to it. And it increases in meaning. Now, I've kept my dreams, a record of my dreams, for 20 years. And as I look at them over and over again, they increase in meaning. But this is my thing, you know. But the reason they're important is that at least one or two dreams will have a real bit of wisdom and or a very important warning. If a dream keeps repeating and repeating, you know that the unconscious is trying to say something. Yes?
No,
I... Oh, I thought you had a question. So repetitive dreams are the unconscious trying to speak to you. Now the other book that I mentioned is Morton Kelsey, Dreams, A Way of Listening to God. I recommend that book highly. It's right here. It was in a bookstore. It's also sold out. It's available in any bookstore. It's only $2.95. He says it better than I. He says it. Everything I'm saying here is covered in here. And he has a very fine bibliography in the back that's under different headings, like Developing a Worldview in Which Dreams Have a Place. And then there's more books. Dreams and Extrasensory Perception. Many people ask, are dreams prophetic? Usually they are not, but some people have extrasensory perception and some people are able to dream prophetic kinds of dreams or do dream them. Dreams and Healing and Prayer, Meditation and the Dream. And Morton Kelsey himself is a priest, an author, a poet, a therapist, following Carl Jung. You notice I did not say a Jungian. Jung himself did not want to have Jungian followers. He wanted people to understand what he said, but to appropriate his teachings to himself, to yourself. So we have as many interpretations of Jung as there are groups. It's almost like denominations, and one Jungian doesn't quite understand another Jungian. End quote. So I say followers of Jung. So Morton Kelsey is a follower of Jung, but he's a Christian, and I too try to put my Christian and my Jungian point of view together and to be a therapist who always tries to bring the person to Christ. There are too many therapists who are secular and who have no place for religion. And I'll read to you in a few minutes Jung's view of religion. In fact, this might be a very good moment. Jung's view on religion. Two aspects of religion, religious experiences and ideas about them, were kept separate by Jung in much of his work. But he seemed to bring them together in some statements made a few years before his death. Widely known is his reply to a question in a 1959 TV interview, Face to Face, produced by the BBC. The interviewer asked, "Do you now believe in God?" And Jung replied, "Difficult to answer. I know. I don't need to believe. I know." Many people have puzzled over Jung's statement. However, it seems to have been explained in an earlier interview. On that occasion, Jung said, "All that I have learned has led me step by step to an unshakable conviction of the existence of God. I only believe what I know." And that eliminates believing. Therefore, I do not take his existence on belief. I know that he exists. I know that my Redeemer liveth, right? In that sense. That doesn't mean that he had a special vision. He just had this inner certainty of having experienced God in many, many ways, and in many ways through dreams. Therefore, to come back to this, dreams are a way of listening to God. In the Bible, dreams are exceedingly important. You can name four or five right off. Jacob's ladder, Joseph was Mary, Joseph in Egypt. Did I mention? Yeah. So anyhow, God has spoken in the past, and I do not see why he should not continue to speak to us, but we are not really attuned, and maybe last night's sermon is to the point. Maybe we need our ears unstopped a little bit. All right. So, Ephatha. Is that it? Ephatha. Open your ears to your dreams. So this is the reason that dreams are important. I believe that they are essential to your wholeness, but that if you do not remember dreams, you may not need at that point to remember. You may not need to remember them. When you need to hear a message, you will hear it. There'll be some big dream or some strange dream that'll come to you, and I'm sure you've all had that experience. Those you don't even have to write down. Okay? So, Jung himself, to come back to Jung, was a son of a pastor and a long line of Protestant ministers. He was reared in the church atmosphere. He has written some profound things, an answer to Job that I have yet to understand. He wrestled with the problem of religion and felt that the Christ image, the appearance of Christ in your dreams, was the most significant image that could occur. It's an image of the self, but there are other archetypes of the self. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. Now let's see. Okay, I've covered Jung's view on religion. Do you have any questions? Now, what he talked about was the fact that we all have several parts to our being. We have what he calls persona. If I ask any of you what you do, you'll say I'm a teacher, a pastor, a housewife, an accountant, computer operator, a bell ringer. That is your persona. And at Holden, the first thing at the table conversation is what do you do, where do you come from? That's your persona. It's directed by the ego, and that's a term he borrowed from Freud, it's universal. That's that conscious part of you, the tip of the iceberg of your whole self. It's the most important thing. You have to have a strong ego to get along in the world. Whatever your age, you have to have an ego that is intact. We call it a strong vessel, borrowing the image from alchemy. In just parenthesis, if you are overwhelmed by the unconscious, if your ego is not strong, that is when you're in danger of a psychosis. But I don't want to go into the difference here between psychosis and neurosis. Just that a psychosis is when the ego is just overwhelmed and then you talk crazy. It may be permanent or maybe just temporary, and one way of dealing with this is to identify with this irrational side and not to say, you should. In fact, you should is a bad way of directing your life anyhow, but that does not mean we shouldn't do the things we have to do. But you know what I mean. If you're governed only by shoulds, you're not allowing some of the irrationalities to come through. We'll talk about that on Wednesday. All right. What was I saying? Dreams, then, are that non-rational side that comes from the unconscious. The ego is the conscious part that directs your life. And another reason that dreams are so important is that when you understand a dream, and I'm using this on purpose, when the energy flows up to your consciousness, and you become aware of something that you didn't know before, a lot of energy is released. And that energy can be used creatively. If you repress things, if you hide them, deny them, pretend they're not there, especially the ugly side that we call the shadow, if you keep holding that down, then you're using a lot of energy that you can't use creatively. So the task of a therapist is to unblock your blockages. And you do it in certain degrees. The first thing is to come in contact and recognize that you have a shadow, that every one of us has sides that we don't like to show, that we can't even accept, that we are shocked at. And we often laugh. Jokes are a wonderful release for the shadow side that we all carry around. And as I said to some people we talked about, if you don't recognize your shadow, and it's not too hard to recognize it, because all you have to listen to carefully is how you gossip about somebody that you don't like. She has a dirty house. Never saw the likes, and so forth. The way you gossip is often a projection of the shadow. All you have to do is recognize it. And you say, well, maybe I do have a dirty house. You see? Well, if you recognize the shadow, you can say, okay, that's a side of me I don't like, but I have to accept. And if you can accept it, then you become whole. You cannot totally assimilate or do away with the shadow and become lily white. It's just unrealistic. But often the emphasis is, especially in religion, that anything dark or ugly or unacceptable is to be denied or not ever brought to light. And then, you see, it'll trip you up. It will catch you unawares. So the first task is to get in touch with your shadow, which is again a reason for looking at your dreams, because in dreams the shadow appears as a person, often, not always, but usually, who is mean, dark, cruel, hateful, of the same sex, you see. So, go ahead, yeah?
I'm just wondering, did I hear you saying that it's not healthy to repress the dream that don't meet your standards or your outward standards?
Mm-hmm.
And by even refusing to remember them and so on?
Well, okay, I agree with the first part. It is not good to repress a dream that seems to shock you or doesn't come up to your standards. But by refusing to remember them, I don't think you can refuse or accept to remember a dream. You can refuse to write it down, yes. Okay. Let's say when you start writing down your dreams, write down everything, don't edit them. I have a beautiful example. When you walk around naked or you're having to pee in the middle of the street, write it down. Those things do have certain symbolic meaning. I have one beautiful example I'd like to share with you and start sharing some of my dreams, and then maybe you will want to share. Anytime you have something, just raise your hand. Okay, on this not editing of the dream. I had a dream which dealt with a lot of things, children and all sorts of things. Then at the very end, I had just one image of a woman that I had known back in Berkeley, an old friend that lost contact with her totally, never thought about her, and suddenly there she is in the middle window. Why should I write that down? It has nothing to do with the rest of the dream. It was like a P.S., you know. I wrote it down all day long. I said, why did I think of her? And in the mail, there came the Jung Association address book. And you know what happened. I opened it, and there was her name. And she lived right nearby. And I was able to call her up. We were able to reestablish our friendship. Mm-hmm. Now, I would not have noticed her name, which was in the book, because there are like hundreds of names. Let's be realistic, 150 names. I would not have noticed her name if I hadn't puzzled about the dream and written down that little coda. because I had nothing else to do. So that's an example of a little synchronicity, which we'll also talk about another time. Now, I shared this dream already, so bear with me if it's repetitious. But I had this on the 16th. When was that? Friday night, I guess? It doesn't matter how you date your dreams. We have had a controversy. Shall you date it by the day before, which is what I do, or shall you date it the morning that you're writing it? Just so you're consistent, all right? Mm-hmm. To me, the night is part of the night, day before. All right, Friday night, I'll preface it by saying I had a letter from my son and was very eager to hear from him. My son is an artist. The dream. We were at our house in one huge room painted white, which is the studio for my son and my daughter, both of whom are artists. And they're all there working away, and I'm very happy about this. So this would be a processing, no, end of dream. This would be a processing of my happiness of receiving a letter from my son, the artist, okay? Another part of the dream, in parenthesis, there is no time, the sequence doesn't matter. You can't say, first this happened, and then that. Dreams are all sort of a one-time period. The dream, a train ride. We are in a different city like London. We have to buy our ticket and then quickly hop on the train. You know, have you been in English trains where you, each door opens, you know? So you, it's different. But what made this train even more different wasn't that it was that it was not pulled by an engine, but pushed by a small silver-gray engine, pushed from the rear. The first train is not the one we want, and then there is a little waiting period. So Jim and I and the boys, they still young boys, wait with the bags, and I decide to walk along the platform to go to a small store, and I talk to a man at the counter. Parenthesis, this was in processing of what I did in Wenatchee while we were waiting for the bus. Continue the dream. I talk to the man, and I return to see the train leaving without me. I'm too late, I have no money, and I don't know the city, but there is no panic. Now that's the first time that's ever happened to me, dream or no dream. So I decide to wait patiently. I go to a little cafeteria and I sit there, and after a while my husband and boys return and everything is well. In the cafeteria I've met some people, and I ask one of them, a man, for lunch. He says, thank you, but I need an interval. I said, oh yes, I understand. You must be an introvert. Now,
processing your sessions.
Processing my sessions. Thank you, you see. Those who've been here before, they realize that we've talked about that. Finally, there's a little coda. Now, here's an example again. Why add this part? As I'm walking to the train, I have one shoe and sock on, and one plastic shoe bag on the left foot. But later, as I look down, I have both shoes and socks on properly. That's the end of the dream. Well, last time, let's see, the train ride, somebody said, well, maybe I'm being pushed into sessions or whatever. I still don't quite know what that little engine at the rear pushing the train meant, but I do think the message that I am not panicky when things go wrong is very significant to me, because never before have I missed a train, and I've missed many trains in dreams that I haven't been in panic to the point of waking up, you see. So without money in a strange city to have the train leave and to be able to wait patiently till they came back was kind of neat. It said something. I'm a good place. But then there's a little, and then there's the processing of the session, you know, oh, you must be an introvert. An introvert, parenthetically, is a person who needs a lot of time to go from one situation to another. Okay, and then walking with one shoe and one plastic bag, well, that's very inappropriate, isn't it? But we did, in the other session, we associated to the nursery rhyme, one shoe on, how's it go? One shoe off, my son John, yeah. Well, my son is not called John, but it may tie back to him, you see. So the dream has a wholeness. or else it turns goes to a fellow, a friend of ours whose name is John, whom we haven't heard from. Yeah. So much for
along,
the dream sharing. Yeah.
Say you're walking along and knew you had no money and you were poor and you asked the man for lunch, but he needed an interval, like space or something. But then you look down and could have possibly be looking down, noticing that part of your thought of being poor was maybe that you could not afford shoes and that you had to wear a puffy bag.
Yeah, that's a possibility. You're saying that I was without money, and as I looked down, I didn't have the appropriate clothing because I was poor and I couldn't afford proper shoes. That's a possibility. I hadn't thought of it that way. Because it came sort of at the end, I thought it was another part, had a different referent, a different meaning. What you do in a dream, you take each part. Now, my son Wallace, for example, if I were talking to a therapist, they say, well, tell me more about your son. And then I would associate, amplify, and talk about my son and everything that he meant and so forth, and what it meant that he was an artist, you see. And then on the train, what did London mean? Now, London, to me, has a very specific meaning, and actually what you said has a good point. Because in London, 40 years ago? Well, anyhow, a long time ago, I lived 2 years in London, and my mother made me go to the Secretarial College to learn typing, which I hated. And all the time there, I was very unhappy. So the unhappiness in the dream. Hey, and she pushed me into it. There it is. She pushed me into it. Thank you. There is the answer. All right. But ever since then, I've had a good typing skill, you see. So. Yes.
When you are having a dream, whether it's an unpleasant or pleasant dream, say if it's a pleasant one, and you wake up before it's finished, when you really would like to have, heard the rest of the dream or a dream death, what does this usually signify? Is it basically you really don't want to hear the rest of the dream?
I don't know what it signifies, except you woke up before it was finished. But some people maintain that if you go right back to sleep and kind of nudge yourself, you can finish it. I personally cannot do that. But I've read several books where people have trained themselves to finish their dreams. The other way you can finish your dream is to take the persons and the situation and do a session in active imagination. And maybe if we have time, we'll do one of the Wednesday session. What you do is close your eyes and sort of talk to the characters in the dream. Let's say what I would do would be to get myself, imagine myself at the station, and sort of image the whole thing and then let it sort of happen. I can't do that very well, but some people are very good at it, and some therapists feel that that's just as valuable as dreams. It's called active imagination.
Emily,
yes.
Is there anything
yeah.
at all that one does during the day in a regular routine of whatever, or is there anything that one could eat or observe?
You want to dream of aphrodisiacs?
Well, whatever. That would affect one's kind of or ability to think.
Nothing other than feeling that dreams are important to remember and suggesting to yourself before you go to sleep that you will remember them. As for eating, I've had as many suggestions that pickles, ice cream, bourbon, you name it, will facilitate or hinder dreams. Bourbon, I feel, if you have more than two, hinders dreams. My husband, the best way I can keep it from drinking, not that he's a drinker, but pardon. The best way I can keep him from drinking more than two bourbons is that he wants to remember his dreams. Also, sleeping pills inhibit dreams.
In terms of dreams, very oftentimes in my life I've come into a situation which is the first time I've ever been there, and I'm sure it's not the first time. Mm-hmm. And yet it seems to be connected in some vague way with dreams. Is that a common occurrence?
Yes, it's a very common or fairly common occurrence, and it's called déjà vu, French word, déjà vu. I'll put it on the board. It means already seen, having seen it before. And it's very, it shakes you a little bit. You say, I've been here before, but I haven't been here before.
Is that the same thing as like when all of a sudden you're, maybe you're talking to somebody, maybe talking to a daughter or a husband, and all of a sudden you realize, I've said all these things before. It's just as if you've rehearsed them before. Mm-hmm. And now you're saying them, but why am I saying them again when
it's similar.
I've already said this?
Yeah, that's similar, but that's not quite the same. This other thing is a little more so. It's more an external event that could not have happened before. It's in a strange place. Let's say you've never been to Holden, and suddenly you say, oh, yeah, I've seen that mountain. I can't quite explain it except that some way the light and the circumstances and maybe something you have dreamt that you have not remembered that tie together. Yes?
Well, these dreams were...
Can you speak up? I can't hear you.
Say, these dreams, now like a gentleman says, that he has a feeling he's been there before. Isn't this due a lot, I think myself, I mean, in reading, in looking at movies, TVs, the imprint is there. You've never been there. I enjoy reading, and I'll dream about this. And I mean, I'm living it, and yet I'm not there.
Yeah, that's similar too. We have in our unconscious a vast store of imprints, and Jung called some of them archetypes. And what you remember in this deja vu is often a activating of the archetype of which you are not conscious. So that gives you that eerie feeling. So whenever you have a big dream too, it gives you a feeling of awe, because the archetypes carry with it this charge, you see. And so what it is that makes you start and say, I've been here before, would be very interesting to analyze. We might get at something real interesting. Okay.
I only dream when I lay on my back. Oh. If I lay on my back, I almost always dream. So I don't like to lay on my back.
You don't like to dream, well.
No, it keeps me awake.
I see.
Or semi-awake.
Semi-awake, yeah. I really don't know if the position has anything to do with it, particularly. Yes?
I was just wondering, too, if in dreams where so many times you persons in the dream stand out so vividly, and then there's in some of my dreams there's another person, but there's no personality. There's nothing there except they're filling the position, and I wake up and try to, who was that other person? Why were they there?
Yeah.
And
what you're saying is that some people are recognizable and others are just sort of a person without a personality, that may be some kind of archetype from the unconscious. And the stranger the person, the more likely it is an archetypal figure. The great mother, the great father, the wise old man, the wise old woman, something like that. And I would just like to say that this gentleman here has shared some fantastic dreams that have helped him build his inventions. So he's like the man who invented the benzene ring or the man who invented the sewing machine. Thank you.
I dream when I'm under stress. Just before we came up here, we were trying to think of all the things we might need at Holden for 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
And every night, I just would have this wild dream. It appeared that I just dreamt all night. If I were to try to write it down, it would take me hours.
And I bet you were tired in the morning.
Oh, I was exhausted. I didn't even go to bed the last night we were at home.
The same thing, yes.
Yeah.
When you have a big event, well, then you will dream it over and over again, and usually with the anxiety is there, you can't find, you don't know, the box won't hold it, what have you. I had the same thing before my daughter got married. We had to meet somebody somewhere, and they had to take us somewhere. She lives on a farm, and we didn't know how to get there, and I didn't know the people. Oh, it was, and I was exhausted. But that's processing the anxiety, which is sort of necessary. And in this case, you were aware that you were full of anxiety because it's a real situation. You have to make decisions and so forth.
But the things you dream seem so unrelated.
Yeah.
I'm
just an
stenographer. I'm just a stenographer.
You are a stenographer.
Yeah, another call the secretary. But anyway, I dream that I've taken a note full of shorthand, and I can't read it. And I wake up the next morning, and I'm always like, thank heaven that was a dream.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
And it's just another dream that I have these dreams quite frequently, and I have a good context that when I wake up. I dreamt that I appeared in public naked, nude, and I have the most terrific. Just a horrible guilt complex.
Well,
after I had awakened.
Yes. Well, can I take both of the each one separately? First, you were a stenographer, and then after you retired,
yes,
you dreamt many times that you took shorthand, and then you couldn't read it, and that ties in with the dream where you appeared naked. See, you lost your persona after you retired. And that's sort of a...
I haven't.
No, I'm sure you haven't. I'm sure you have put something else in this place. But that part of working in an office is gone, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what that dream says where you can do it.
Since I retired, to me, it's like being out of jail.
Great. Yeah. Yeah.
But the naked thing,
we'll talk about it later, the naked part.
You mentioned a while back about taking that people take sleeping pills tend not to remember dreams, or they may not dream. Would would this possibly, for a person who took sleeping pills quite often at night where they wouldn't dream or wouldn't remember, because I have a friend who has insomnia and she tries to take these so that she can sleep at night and she can't sleep. The fact that maybe that she doesn't dream or can't remember them, would this make her apprehensive like this to the point that she couldn't sleep?
It's possible, but the reasons for insomnia are legion.
Yeah.
And one of them is depression. One of the first signs is insomnia or anxiety. Uh-huh. But anxiety and depression sort of go together. There are many, many reasons I wouldn't know. But if you can't sleep, I think you should take sleeping pills for a while so that you can at least sleep, because the torture of not sleeping is worse than any nightmare. There was someone over there, yes?
Well, many of our dreams are so unpleasant we wouldn't want to write them down. I know one time our younger son, it was time for him to get up in the morning, and he said, "Oh, would you wake me up, or I was having the nicest dream." Well, most dreams don't seem to be that way.
Well, I think they're about equal as half and half, but we don't want to remember the unpleasant ones, and it's the unpleasant ones that give us the most insight. They're probably about that side of us that we just don't want to own, what I talked about before, the shadow. And that's why it's kind of scary and unpleasant, but the conscious mind just doesn't want to own the unconscious. That's just given. And so you have to force mm-hmm. yourself sometimes to remember them, you see. But if you really need to remember a dream, it'll be big enough for you to remember it without writing down. Yeah.
What is it? When you dream about the past?
Here's a clue. Because I'm trying to give you tools. If you dream of yourself as a young girl, maybe you want to look and see what it was, why it is that now you're thinking of yourself as a young girl. What was it at that particular time that was good or bad or mm-hmm. happy or sad, you see? Yes?
Well, I don't remember dreams. I mean, it's been, I don't know how long since I remember one, but it was sort of interesting some years ago. I would get very busy doing a lot of different things, and I would dream the same dream. It was always a dream where I had forgotten to do something, and I'd wake up and I'd think, "Now what did I forget to do?" And it was just all in the dream. And
that's
then,
very similar yeah. to Roxy and my anxiety dream about the wedding. When you have a lot to do, you see, part of dreaming is processing the day's events. And certainly, you know, when you have many things to do, it's so easy to perhaps forget. Be afraid that you've forgotten something.
It told me I better slow down. But it was funny because it was the same thing all the time.
Yeah. But once you had finished all those tasks, that
then
dream
it went away.
No, whenever you solved a problem, the dream ceased, the repetitive. Yes?
Yeah, I was in the Navy for 4 years. When I was in, I first got in on the submarine, and everyone takes a role in the mess cook in the kitchen. You guys set up the tables and all this. And I was really working hard. I mean, got up 6 in the morning, didn't go to bed until 8 or 9 at night. Sometimes earlier than that, I was like, yeah, I do prepare the meal. And went to bed, and I was just exhausted every night. I just hit that bed, and I just die until the next morning. And they wake me up. And I was exhausted when I woke up. Then one night, some guys woke me up, and I kind of looked around, and I was on the floor. I was on my rack, on my bunk, and I was on the floor looking around, and I had a shoe in my hand. I asked them, "What was I doing?" to the guys, and they said, "Well, you're looking for a piece to the milk machine here, inside the shoe on the floor." And the milk machine, you lift up the handle type thing. And I wondered just how, I was really embarrassed, you know, but I just wondered how sleepwalking then has, you know, because it really tied in there with a real vivid dream. I remembered it after they told me, but I didn't remember.
Well, it really was a vivid dream, and you acted it out. Sleepwalking usually is of a different order. It's just, it's more physiological, you know. But your bunk may not have been very high, so
no.
Maybe you just rolled over, and it wasn't actually walking. It was just, you know, continuing on the floor.
Kind of crawling around.
Yeah. Well, it was a processing of that hard work you have been doing every day.
Is there any significance at all when you dream that you are an animal? I dreamt one time that I was a little dog, and I was running down the street, and there were these neat trees on each side. And I can remember in the dream that I was so happy that I was running down the street barking and kicking my back legs up and just ecstatic, and it was a beautiful day. And I woke up and I was barking. I woke myself up. But normally you don't dream that you're something else.
Well, several things. When you often dreams of animals and dreaming of certain animals, they're helpful animals or they're threatening animals. When you identify to the point of becoming that animal, then you're transformed. It's a transformation dream. You're transforming yourself into the animal. And I suppose you like dogs.
Mm-hmm.
You have a dog?
No.
Oh. Would you like to have a dog?
Not really. No.
Well, the fact that you were so happy meant that there's something about the dog, and we could go into this more later, that made you so happy that you, to the point of barking. Yeah. And just one thing, when you speak or bark or yell or scream, it means that you're already about to wake up, and what you're doing in the dream activates your voice box, you see. Usually it doesn't, but you were saying?
At that time, possibly, would it be that maybe you are not happy with yourself as an individual, and this is something that you're pushing into being to something else?
It could be. We can talk about it later if you like. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
I'd like to take a look at dread. The dread side of dreams, a lot of times for me, as a matter of fact, I don't even remember that I dreamed until I walked in this room, which means I must wipe, you know, I must wipe it out. When I start thinking about it, I start thinking the following procedure. There is some dread connected with my dreams. Almost always the dread is connected with my children and my kind of fear for what's going to might happen to them. And I can remember myself almost forcing myself to awake because I didn't want that to proceed any further.
Well, that's similar to this gentleman who doesn't want to remember his own bad dreams or horrible dreams. Well, up here at Holden, many people come to me and say, oh, I had these awful dreams, or scary dreams, or violent dreams, partly because you're in such a supportive environment, you have no responsibilities, certainly as guests you have none, and you're able to hear the messages from the unconscious, and partly because when I tell you all to remember your dreams, it becomes important. But dread and fear and anger occur in dreams quite a bit, and that again is a way of processing the unconscious fear that we do have. I mean, I think we all have to admit that we're terribly afraid for our children, our next generation. And that should motivate us, just a little sermon here, to work for peace. We have about 10 more minutes.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what is the significance of calling for help in a dream and finally waking oneself up and, you know, it almost being a spoken word?
Well, I guess you need to call for help. Really need to call for help. Again, we're all in some scary positions. We have lots of fears that we don't acknowledge, and that particular fear may mean that you need to do something about the problem or seek help, or, you know, it would depend on the specific situation. Okay.
Well, have they found that extroverts dream less than introverts?
Well, that's a good question. That's a very good question. I don't know. I look at the research here. Maybe I can answer your question tomorrow.
Oh.
I personally don't really know whether extroverts dream more than introverts.
I mean extroverts being less than introverts.
Less. Sorry. That extroverts dream less. I don't know any research that would support it. But theoretically you're right, because the extrovert would be giving out more energy and was not paying much attention to the inner life. Thus, even though he dreams, he may not remember it. Maybe just poppycock. maybe just unimportant. After all, it doesn't help me fix the truck. It doesn't help me cook the meal. It doesn't do any of the practical things. And that the introvert, being more attuned to the inner life, would remember more dreams. But in terms of actual dreaming, it's equal, because we all have the same number of rapid eye movement periods of sleep where we dream. Yes, okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to hear a little comment. You have on your dreams are a way of listening to God. So far, we've just been talking about dreams, how they affect ourselves. How do you determine that it is a dream where God is trying to tell you something?
Well, the Holy Spirit still speaks to us in dreams, and Morton Kelsey has given good examples in here. One rough way of knowing it is when you wake up with a feeling of awe, when there is a very specific message of wisdom that is conveyed to you by a wise old man or a wise old woman, I think that is the vehicle through which God speaks. Or if Christ himself appears to you, obviously.
Or perhaps a revelation of a verse you've read in Scripture.
Oh, yes,
indeed. A new revelation.
Mm-hmm. That would be lovely. Mm-hmm. You had it.
Sometimes I was very close to my mother and my grandmother, and they're both gone. And sometimes I'll have a dream that I spent the whole night visiting and having a marvelous time, and I'll wake up in the morning and I'll feel so good, and I'll say to my husband, gee, I had a really nice time. I visited with my mother all evening.
Well, I think that would be a beautiful example of how God comforts us in our dreams, because when our spouse or our mother or parents have died, our good friends, we really miss them. And when they appear in our dreams, it is a comfort. And it usually, just almost always, is a comforting radiance. They are coming to you to say, I'm okay. Somebody shared about this where the person had died of cancer and then came back, said, I'm okay, don't worry. I've had dreams like that. Jung has had dreams like that. And I feel it's one of the ways that we are comforted. Esther?
I've never been able to decide whether I feel Christ talking to me or if it's a dream. But at the time of my life when I had decided to give everything I had away and follow Christ, I started out in a van by myself, and I picked up another girl, about 21. And we came to this park, a place to stay. And about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, I don't know the exact time, something said, move on, move on, move on. I didn't know if it was a dream or not, but I moved on. I mean, I got up, got dressed, got in the seat, and took off. And about an hour later, the wind hit the van so hard it almost dented the side. It was a tremendous wind. And we got a little further. We stopped to get some coffee, and this girl thought I'd gone crazy, you know. Why start? And when we walked into the restaurant there, everybody's running around and crying and everything else. And I said, what's the matter? And they said, did you come from the east? And I said, yes. And they said, well, that trailer camp down there was just wiped out with a tornado. And this has happened to me so many times, and I don't know if it's a dream, or I don't know if it's Christ really taking care of me, but I have believed in Christ since I was little. I think I'm one of the king's kids. I know he's not going to let anything happen to me, and sometimes it seems that there's a lot, much to do about nothing, but we have been so close that I could just go on and on. Or
but Esther, I think you have a special gift from I really do.
It frightens
me. Some people have more of a gift. It is like a musical gift to have ESP. And then,
but is that a dream or is that Christ speaking?
I really couldn't say. I couldn't say offhand. We could talk about it later, but I really couldn't say offhand. But it is a wonderful way that you were warned.
And she just settled down then. She was, you know, she was, she'd go with him after that.
You must have your antenna out.
Yeah, right. She was scared as I was when I started.
Yeah.
My mother had a dream about a year after her mom died, and it was the first time she'd ever dreamt of her since she died. And it was just like her face was just there, and she was speaking. And the main thing that my mom got out of it, which was just really, my mom woke up just in awe, kind of, and she studied dreams before, but hadn't lately, and she just kind of woke up and was just, you know, really concerned about this dream. But my grandmother was speaking, and she said that, the east will remain, but the west will remain no more. And it scared my mom. I have never seen a change come over my mom so much, just her attitudes and stuff. It was a little bit before, I think, our family really started talking about the arms race and everything. But I think, you know, my mom's just maybe fears and stuff of that, but she just, I saw a real change in my mom's attitudes about more care and understanding.
Yeah, that we could go into in great detail. That is quite a message.
Yeah, she felt like it really was a message of some kind. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Yes?
I had a dream about a year ago, and I don't remember the incident, but I do remember the person. And it was a person that I had known in college, and we were particularly good friends, and that was about 40 years ago. And I thought, the next morning, I thought, now why am I dreaming about Carmen Mielke? I mean, I hadn't even thought of her all these years. And it was just a casual acquaintance. I think we had a double date one time, you know.
Yeah.
And it stayed with me all that day. The next day I had a letter from her.
Oh, that happened to Esther too.
And she told me about her life, how she'd been married and her husband had died. And then she was having a summer home. She lived in Texas or someplace and came up to Minnesota during the summertime and remembered that I lived in a town nearby and then had involved different people to find out. And then I learned my married name and where I was and had written to me.
Fantastic, yeah. That's lovely. Well, then we call that a synchronicity, and that is an example of you remembering it was puzzling to you. Why should you remember this person? Just as I told you, I saw this woman that I hadn't heard of for years, and the next day that her name was in that address book. Yours is even more direct. That does happen quite often. So I still am puzzling about one of my high school friends, I guess, that I dreamt about. Haven't made the connection yet. Another thing you can do with that kind of dream is to go back. You mentioned you had a double date. Why was that important? Search that out for yourself. You might get some more clues. Well, it's 1:45, so we have 5 more minutes till the bell rings. Thank you.